Barcelona are on the brink of the last four after a comprehensive win over Borussia Dortmund. Robert Lewandowski scored twice against his old club in a 4-0 victory. No such joy for Aston Villa boss Unai Emery. Back at Paris Saint-Germain, his side struck first and led, but ultimately lost. A late goal from Nuno Mendes, making it 3-1. So much to discuss as we reach the conclusion of the Champions League quarter-final first leg ties. I'm Rob Daly. I'm joined by European football expert Andy Brassel and commentator Richard Connolly as we look back on Wednesday night. Richard, first to you. We'll get into the detail of the game surely, but a statement win again from Barca.
Yeah, I make it. That's now 36 goals they've scored in 11 matches in the competition this season, averaging more than three per game. They got four tonight. This potent attacking line is very special. The experience of Lewandowski, the youth of Lamine Yamal and Rafinha having the season of his life. There was so much to enjoy tonight.
And we saw two exceptional solo goals, Andy, at the Parc des Princes for Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, we did. And I think it says a lot for Aston Villa that Paris Saint-Germain had to find another level. And they really did. They found it frustrating in that first half in particular. But Désiré Doué, who's emerging as a real European star, still as a teenager, and Kvisha Kvaratskhelia pulling them right out of the top draw.
Looking forward to discussing both players. Well, let's start with Barcelona Dortmund. They hosted them as a repeat of the match we saw on match day six, which was a five-goal thriller, you may remember, in Barca's favour. Andy and Richard, watch this one tonight.
It's taken by Fermín López all the way to the back post. Wasn't done badly. They've scored. It's been helped in. Pau Cubarsí got the touch. And Rafinha slides in and has tried to claim it as it crosses the line. And this is going to be Rafinha's goal. Koundé in a good advanced position, allows Yamal to chip in, to cut in and chip into Rafinha, who heads it back across goal, and Lewandowski heads home from almost underneath the crossbar.
And not only was the ball perfect from Lamine Yamal there, it looked like he might shoot, but in fact, looping that ball over to the back post. Really, you see the real value of Rafinha there.
And so Barcelona have some space on the counter. And that's Lamine Yamal finding Fermín López. And he's got men with him. Lewandowski's won! And Lewandowski scores again for Barcelona. Devastating counter-attack. And they're three goals to the good. And here's Rafinha. The early ball to Lamine Yamal. He's in on goal. He scores! He scores for Barcelona. It's 4-0. They've got one foot in the semi-finals of the Champions League.
They certainly do. It was comprehensive. And let's get into it now. And maybe that nervy moment for Rafinha, Richard, in the first half, when he thought he might have actually ruined Barca's first goal.
Yeah, I might revise that that commentary line. I think they've got more than one foot in the semi-finals with a four-goal advantage. Yeah. The best part of 2 feet. The first goal, obviously vital in any tie. And it looked like Pau Cubarsí had scored it with a nice finish from a knockdown at the back post to a free kick from Inigo Martinez. Cubarsí got around his defender and flicked it across the goalkeeper. It was rolling over the line when Rafinha slid in to steal the goal for himself, really, from on the goal line. But it did look like Rafinha might have been doing that from an offside position, which would have caused, a bit of an issue. Nonetheless,
he looked a bit panicked.
He thought he'd ruined the moment for his team. But all was well that ended well for him. He was onside by about 20 centimetres, and it was therefore his goal and his 12th in the UEFA Champions League this season. And he remains, despite Lewandowski's later efforts, the leading scorer in the competition.
And we saw in the second half, Andy, that against this Barcelona team, and I think it's the case against the best teams in the competition right now, if you open up a little bit and leave them those gaps, I mean, they'll just punish. They're devastating on the counter-attack right now, Hansi Flick's team.
Yeah, that's what Barcelona are there for. And I think at this point, we have to start asking ourselves, as Barcelona get ready for a probable semi-final and maybe even more. Of course, they're in with a genuine chance of the treble with a commanding lead in La Liga and, of course, in the Copa del Rey final against Real Madrid. If they win the treble, where does Hansi Flick stand amongst modern European coaches? To win a treble twice with two different teams from different countries. And bear in mind, at the start of his last treble winning season, he was assistant to Niko Kovac, who he beat tonight.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And then by the end of that season, of course, he was parachuted in just for a couple of games initially, then until Christmas, then until the end of the season, then he's a treble winner. And he's created this team totally in his own image at Barcelona. This is so different from Xavi's Barcelona. And I think if you'd have asked people while Xavi was still playing, would you like to see Xavi as coach at Barcelona? They'd have all said, oh yes, that would be an absolute, you know, aesthetic delight. That would be the best Barcelona you could imagine. But actually, Hansi Flick's Barcelona is the most attractive Barcelona since they last won the Champions League with that incredible front three and with Luis Enrique, another one who's a contender to win the UEFA Champions League this season, in charge.
I think this is what that Barcelona team does to you. It gets you carried away. It gets experienced.
Wait, what are you saying, Richard?
It gets experienced football watchers like Andy Brassel talking about the treble at the start of April, you know, after the first leg of the quarterfinal. I mean, none of the squad and the manager are going to be having that kind of chat right now. But you can only see the power of their attacking football and the delight that they take in attacking with such pace and such quality. And when you've got a finisher like Robert Lewandowski, who's long since gone past the 100 goal mark in this competition and is as fit and as sharp and as experienced as he is, and then you've got the technical players in the midfield like Frenkie de Jong, who at times again tonight was a joy, the way he turns out with the ball and wrong foots defenders. You've got the passing of Pedri in there. Fermin Lopez was lovely on the ball tonight and added so much to them going forward. The fullbacks were terrific. It is a side you can get carried away about.
On the touchline, by the way, at full time, a nice moment. Club captain Marc-Andre Ter Stegen embracing Wojciech Szczesny, the man who's in for him at the moment because of injury. And Szczesny's still unbeaten. I think it's 21 games now, perhaps, as Barcelona goalkeeper, and he's yet to lose a match. Let's focus on that hybrid nature to the team you were talking about there, Richard, and maybe the youth and experience, the experience of Lewandowski and the youthfulness. I mean, Lamine Yamal tonight, Andy, the first player under 18 to have played 20 Champions League matches, and his toe-poke goal was wonderful too.
It was, and I always say the same thing about Lamine Yamal, because it's still remarkable to me that to have a young player who's explosive and can go past players and has amazing raw talent is one thing. He is so polished at his age. It's unbelievable.
Decision making is crazy.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. He has such an innate understanding that players almost twice his age don't have of when is the right time to release the ball. So we talked about it. We're listening back to the commentary there. The fact that for that second goal scored by Lewandowski just after half-time, which was the decisive one in really deciding the tide of the game, I think, he comes inside, you think he's going to have a shot, and then you think he's overhit the cross, but he hasn't. It's absolutely perfect, and he knows the run that Rafinha's going to make, and it makes it into Lewandowski's easiest goal of the season. And it's that sort of two steps ahead vision that really, like, most players will never have.
So that's 12 goals for Rafinha, 11 for Lewandowski. They are the top two scorers in the Champions League. Do Barcelona, ahead of Real Madrid and Paris Saint-Germain right now, have the best front three in Europe? What do we think? And we're going to get to Paris and what their attack's done tonight.
Yes. Yes, I think they do, because a great front three, as we've seen with previous great front threes, is not just about having the best three forwards. It's about having three forwards who are perfectly complementary. And they've all got such different skill sets. And despite having different backgrounds, coming through different systems, different ages, they just click together perfectly and they understand each other perfectly. But this has been the same thing since October. And I think the other thing with Barcelona is they have the ability to change it now. Now, if you go back to the wobble they were having either side of Christmas, I think the thing was there, and Hansi Flick talked about it very eloquently. He said, well, on paper, we're stronger because we're bringing back players like Gavi, we're bringing back players like De Jong, but they're not yet at the same physical level as the players they're coming to join. That has changed now. They've got to the rhythm, and you talked about it with De Jong earlier, Richard. You know, the fact that he's in probably his best ever form for
Fermín
Barcelona
Lopez
at the
says
moment.
That it's been very different this year, and he's never been so fit as a Barcelona player.
And I think you see that. When they come off the bench, they're already... I think you see what Ferran's added as a substitute, as Richard was saying earlier in the competition, and the way he defended from the front tonight. And you think that Dortmund could have got a goal in the last 15 minutes to make it more of a game, to give them a little bit of hope in the second leg. And then Araujo comes on as sub, just makes a couple of unbelievable blocks to say, no, no.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of appetite they have.
It was always going to be difficult for Dortmund. We knew that, Richard, because of the absentees they had as well tonight.
Yeah, certainly some big absentees. I mean, Nico Schlotterbeck recently injured his knee, is out probably for the rest of the season. Sabitzer is still out injured. Pascal Gross was suspended tonight. Niklas Süle came on for the last few minutes. He's had a really injury-disrupted season. You know, those are key players in the current squad. There are other players who were part of the squad that got to the final last year who moved on for different reasons during the summer. So it was asking a lot. I think you come to this stage of the competition and you have to be optimistic. They'd won two knockout ties. They'd come from behind to win away from home in Lille in the round of 16, which was a huge result in the context of a season where results away from home have not gone well for Dortmund. So they came with hope, and they came with a big striker in Guirassy themselves, who's having a terrific season for them, his first for the club, and in Adeyemi and in Gittins, you know, players who themselves can cause trouble. Adeyemi was a little disturbed, I think, by quite an early yellow card, and that took something away from him in the first half, and he had to be replaced at half time, I think, for that reason. So that was another thing that went against them in the big picture.
Let's hear from Barca boss Hansi Flick speaking on the importance of Lewandowski and Lamine Yamal.
They're important, but also, you know, it's also when you see our defense, it's also good. Also the players who came from the bench, they directly on the same level, and this is at the moment, this is very important because we have a lot of matches, and the next 3 days we play in Leganés. It's tough for the guys. I'm really appreciate about that what they are doing.
I even think of the youth and experience they got at the back, that duality of Pau Cubarsiu and Inigo Martinez is having this wonderful late spell in his career. He's really been rejuvenated by Hansi Flick. We'll come back to this game later. Let's look at the other quarterfinal first leg tie next.
You're listening to the official UEFA Champions League podcast.
Elsewhere tonight, Aston Villa made the trip to France to face Paris Saint-Germain. Guy Mowbray was watching the action unfold.
Rashford, Tielemans, can he pull it back? He's got it across, and Rodgers has got it in! Aston Villa have hit PSG with a sucker punch! And as royalty goes wild, as Villa supporters go delirious, is doing into a shooting position. Oh, that's wonderful. Special goal from a very special young talent. That is how you put one past one of the world's best goalkeepers. PSG 1, Aston Villa 1. Axel Kvaratskhelia. Oh, he's got all the way. What a goal. What a player. The Georgian genius gives PSG the lead. Dembele has other ideas. Oh, and he's broken the lines. What a chance. What a goal. It really is advantage Paris Saint-Germain now. Look what that one means. Dembele found a way through. And Nuno Mendes has maybe just planted one Parisian foot in the semi.
Yeah, Villa will leave Paris. And you felt, you know, watching the game that they were quite happy with 2-1. They were kind of camped on the edge of their own box. They were making it difficult. Villa's five-man defence out of possession were shutting down Paris. Paris's changes hadn't really made the difference. But then that moment of quality, Ousmane Dembele dropping off as that false nine, slipping in Nuno Mendes. And I think on a personal level, Andy, this is what's been surprising about Dembele's renaissance in this position. I'd always just thought of him as this quite direct wide player. And he's doing this stuff in central areas that can carve open a five-man back line that look pretty settled.
He is. And the interesting thing about Dembele, I think if you asked like regular visitors to the Parc des Princes what they've really noticed about him while he's gone on this flurry of goals, he's less involved in the game than he has been before, because they relied on him so much last season. I think people looked at the numbers and expected a little bit more of him, but he's been one of Paris's most important players since he's arrived from Barcelona. That is because he's good at holding the ball up with his back to goal when they're getting it out, and he's good at bringing it up the pitch quickly. And of course, the thing about Dembele is you've never known the way he's going to go, because he's got two feet that are as good as each other. Perfect balance. But I think he's using those gifts actually more sparingly in central areas, because he's just been on the end of stuff, really. So, funnily enough, he's had to carry less creative burden since he's been put in that central area. But, of course, the numbers have gone absolutely through the roof, because you have central position plus otherworldly technique equals loads of goals. It's that simple, really.
That's some Andy Brassel maths there. Yeah, get a pen. It was a really impressive comeback from Paris Saint-Germain. We saw the game plan. Villa were going to sit in. They started Marcus Rashford up front instead of Ollie Watkins. It was counter-attacking football, and who would begrudge them? And it's how they scored. John McGinn won the ball on halfway. He set away Rashford and Tielemans to set up Morgan Rodgers. A brilliant moment for Villa. But Paris didn't panic, Andy, did they? And Désiré Doué's equaliser on 39 minutes was one of the goals of the Champions League this season.
Yeah, it was brilliantly finished. And I think if there's any satisfaction for Aston Villa, and I think you're right, they did have a game plan, they had a good game plan, they did make it difficult for Paris. They've made them score three extraordinary goals to get through them. They've not given them anything.
No.
And we said how Dortmund might have a few regrets at, making it difficult for Barcelona initially and then conceding the first goal from a set piece. I don't think Unai Emery can get back to the changing room and say, oh, well, you could have defended that a bit better. Because they've made them score three of the better goals you will see in the UEFA Champions League this season. And as you say, that little bit of extra quality, this Paris side are riding the absolute crest of a wave at the moment. But we've seen it throughout the back end of the group stages leading into now. They've found themselves in difficult positions, like when they were 2-0 down against Manchester City at the Parc des Princes, in situations where normal teams will panic. And they've not at all. They've been able to pull it out of the fire. It would have been easy to panic after the first leg against Liverpool, in which they played almost the perfect performance and bizarrely lost the game. And they just rolled their sleeves up at Anfield, started all over again and won the tie.
And it's why you suspect they won't be daunted by the atmosphere at Villa Park. We'll get to that second leg in a moment. Let's hear from the man who then made it 2-1, Kvisha Kvaratskhelia.
Yeah, it was a difficult start because we conceded the goal, but the good feeling was that Doué scores us and we come back on the game and we try to score more and more goals. So we are happy with this result, but we have to keep going because there is the second game and job's not finished.
His goal was stunning as well, picking the ball up near halfway, running at Axel Disasi, who'd just come on 4 minutes into the match, and he just looked a bit baffled by what was happening in front of him before the Georgians scored for 2-1. So it finishes 3-1. Paris had 30 attempts on the night. Emi Martinez had to make a number of saves. If you had to sell the idea that Villa can turn this around, Andy, where would you be looking to with Unai Emery's team?
Two words: Villa Park. I mean, it's got an extraordinary European history and heritage, and we've already seen some unbelievable atmospheres there this season. They've rolled over some really good teams there, and we talked about Paris Saint-Germain not panicking. I think Villa, considering that they are new to this level, or this generation of Villa players are new to this level, they've shown excellent composure throughout, really. And I think, you know, when they've got hit with moments of big quality tonight, it's easy for them to fold, and they don't fold. So I think you look at their attacking quality. I wonder if they go with Asensio from the beginning next week. I think that's got to be a possibility. Of course, he's been on great form. They have high-impact players in Asensio, in Rashford, in Rodgers, who can open up really good teams. So that's got to be your sell, I think.
Now let's hear from Morgan Rodgers now.
They're a really good team, really well organised, got stars all over the pitch. It's difficult. We knew we were in a fight, we knew we had to defend well and battle, and overall we did, probably just a bit of quality from them and probably a bit, maybe errors or maybe a little bit of something that happened that probably could have prevented for the goals, but that's football, that's what happens, and we've got another leg to try and turn it around. We're going to go for everything and try and win the tie, and ultimately we'll see where it takes us.
I think Roger's talking about himself there, actually, when he was trying to stop Doué getting that shot away, but he just couldn't quite get to him to stop him scoring for 1-1. And remember, players like him 16 months ago playing in the Championship. John McGinn, 6 years ago this week, playing against Rotherham in the Championship, tonight captaining Aston Villa in a European Cup, a Champions League quarterfinal, and he won the ball decisively to get the goal that gave Villa the lead. Ultimately beaten 3-1. The return legs of tonight's match is quick turnaround. 6 days. They're all going to play on Tuesday, the 15th of April. And, of course, we'll have coverage here on Match Day Live. Meanwhile, next Wednesday will be the second legs of the two ties, which began last night. Declan Rice to strike it. Right footed! Oh, my goodness! What a goal! Is it going to be Declan Rice right-footed again? It's even better! What a night for Declan Rice! What a night for Arsenal! Back to Mars Lewis, Skelly on the edge of the area. Infield, Marino! It's three! This is sensational! Awesome from Arsenal!
Lautaro Martinez, it's a brilliant finish. And a really snappy move from the Italian club. The man from Argentina, putting Bayern behind, and it must be, it's Müller! The magic of Müller, you cannot write him off. The stage was set, and the space finder has delivered. And here's Carlos Augusto, can they get back in front again? They can. It's Fratesi. Sensational response from the Italian club.
So some impressive wins last night. Inter with that victory at Bayern. We'll get to that shortly. But first, Arsenal 3, Real Madrid 0. Some lead to take to the Bernabeu next week. Two special Declan Rice free kicks. Here's Mikel Arteta on his star midfielder.
We haven't scored a direct free kick since September 2021. Burnley away, Martin Odegaard. So it's been a long time. So to score two goals in 12 minutes of that magnitude, of that quality from the same player, a player that has never scored a free kick before in his career, I mean, what are the odds? But he's done it tonight, and I'm a big believer. I think the crowd played something with the energy that they put in, and it helped us massively to win the game.
Did he say they hadn't scored a direct free kick in nearly 4 years?
It did sound like that, didn't it?
That's what he said.
I mean, you don't see them often, it feels like, these days.
In 2021.
To Odegaard in 2021, they get two in the same half of football. Extraordinary. Well, look, despite trailing by three goals going into the second leg, Real Madrid manager Carlo Ancelotti does not believe the tie is over.
You look at the game tonight, there is no possibility, but football is changed. I never expected, no one expected that Rice scored two goals on set pieces, and he scored two goals on set pieces tonight. So, football, everything can happen. We have to believe, we need to have trust, because sometimes, a lot of time in Bernabeu happened.
Well, it's going to have to be right up there. It's one of the greatest.
It is.
European Cup, you think of Liverpool a few years ago against Barcelona, you think of La Remontada, Barca against Paris. Can they do it, Andy?
I suppose they can.
Well, that's not the Real Madrid attitude, is it? They're not doing that in the dressing room, are they?
I'm not coaching them for the second leg. It has been revealed. I think...
You're sceptical, clearly.
I would say with anyone else, it's not possible. Because it's Real Madrid, it's a little bit possible, I suppose. Just like Ancelotti said, do I believe that Real Madrid can get through the second leg without conceding a goal? No. So immediately they need four, which makes it a really, really tall order.
But we began this part of the programme talking about the best forward line in the competition, and if the Real Madrid front three had heard us talking about Barcelona in those terms, they would not have been happy. I mean, this is the stage of the tournament where we consistently say, you know, that the best players in the world come to the fore, and Declan Rice has done something, you know, otherworldly with those two extraordinary free kicks. You can bet your bottom dollar that, you know, Vinicius Junior and Mbappe and Rodrigo are, and Bellingham behind them, are going to be thinking, I will do something as great, if not greater, on Wednesday night.
They'll
next
be smarting
week.
Right
and
now.
Yeah,
won't
and
they?
And, yeah. And you know, it's about that big ego on a big night and going out there to prove yourself capable of the extraordinary. And they have individuals who can elevate themselves to that level.
Well, Jude Bellingham has said this as well. He said, we could have lost by more, but now we're going back to our place. So it could be completely different. We'll have coverage of the second leg, of course, for you on Match Day Live. Inter returned to Italy, of course, with a 2-1 lead over Bayern. Here's Bayern's boss, Vincent Kompany, who insists his tie is not over either.
It's always about scoring the goals, but for us, having chances mean normally we score. And today was only one goal, so, okay. Again, it's half-time, it's 2-1, and it's great to play at home, but it's also great to play away, and we are looking forward to the game.
Sandy, can you make a case for Bayern? We'll get Richard maybe to do Inter. A compelling case for Inter to hold on to their lead. But what case would there be for Bayern that they can turn it around at San Siro?
I think defensively is the issue, like with Real Madrid, because they've got so many injuries at the moment. What I would say is, from that first leg, even though they lost, I'd be very encouraged with the performance if I was Vincent Kompany. Yep. Because they created enough chances to win the game. There's no doubt about that. And the guy who didn't take them, Harry Kane, is normally taking them. So if they create those chances again next week, maybe completely different, and maybe we're going to extra time.
Richard, hoping you're going to entertain my exercise here. I mean, and argue for Inter going through.
Because we've been talking about forward lines, haven't we? I mean, Inter, I would argue, are the best defence in the competition. And
yeah,
defence wins championships historically, right? So why would you not? They've also got an attacker in Lautaro Martinez, who's maybe playing as well at any point in his career, is scoring goals, but is a terrific contributor to the team in a variety of different ways. They've got vast experience. If you were to put up the midfield that they played with last night against the midfield that Dortmund had in tonight, in terms of, you know, experience and big game knowledge, you know, it's chalk and cheese. So you know, that's a big win away in Munich as well. I mean, Inter will be seeing themselves as in with a genuine chance of winning the whole competition.
They've conceded 3 times in 11 games, and statistically the best defence as well, as you mentioned there, in the Champions League this season. Let's quickly turn things back and get our moments of the night from our respective games. Andy, I'll come to you for Paris Saint-Germain's 3-1 win over Aston Villa, but Richard, your moment of the night from Barca 4, Borussia Dortmund 0.
It's probably going to be the Lamine Yamal goal, the fourth goal for Barcelona. It happened very, very quickly, but the two touches that he had were actually extraordinary, both with the left foot, and it's a little toe poke of a finish, the second, to put it into the corner. But really high class to finish that precisely, that quickly. And of course he took it as if it was nothing, and it sealed a wonderful night for Barcelona.
It certainly has. Andy, your highlight from France this evening?
Désiré Doué and his goal. We're looking at a start, not just of the future, but of the present. They needed something spectacular to get themselves back into the game, Paris, and he provided it.
Gents, thank you very much for your company. So, Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, Arsenal and Inter will all take leads into their second leg ties next week. Match Day Live on Tuesday will be on air 15 minutes ahead of kickoff from 9 p.m. CEST. And don't forget that this very podcast is available to download shortly after every single match night of the UEFA Champions League. For now, from me, Rob Daly, and the rest of the Match Day Live team, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the official UEFA Champions League podcast.